You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And we are doing our brunch with Bernie, our national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders a day early today, and given the holidays and all these things. And so, Bernie, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you.
Let me just wish everybody a very happy holiday season and a great new year.
Amen. I totally agree with you. And good news for progressives, I understand.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I was just reading an article this morning which talks about a Pew Research Center poll which has the word progressive, the ideological label progressive, at a 67% approval rating, which is 5 points higher than conservative label. And I think that's interesting. But I think what we should, when we talk about progressive, I think sometimes we don't do as good a job as we should in defining what that means. Because I think when you do that, Tom, you will find that the vast majority of the American people, especially middle-class people, working people, lower-income people, will come to the conclusion, in fact, that they are progressives. If we're clear about what the progressive vision is about. And let me just say a few words on that. It seems to me, and I think it seems to the vast majority of the people in my own state, and I think across this country, that government has a fundamental responsibility to make sure that ordinary people have at least a minimal standard of living and are entitled to certain basic rights. And I think most people end up agreeing with that. If you do polls out there, and I've seen these polls, and you say, should we abolish Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid, or cut those programs, you know what you find? You find Tea Party people saying, no, we believe in Social Security because we understand that when you get old and you get sick and you can't work, of course you need a strong, guaranteed retirement package. And when you ask people, should the United States join the rest of the world and have guaranteed health care to all of their people? The American people say, yeah, that makes sense as well. Then when you ask people what the right wing wants to see happen, should we give tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and cut back on programs that are important for working families? Overwhelmingly, the American people say, no, we don't think that that makes a good idea. Should you be deregulating major industries like Wall Street, which have already caused so many problems for this country? People say no. So I think what our goal has got to be is to bring people together around a progressive ideology which says that government has got to stand up for the basic rights of ordinary Americans. And in order to do that, we're going to have to take on the big money interests who today have so much economic and political power. And I think we have to be very clear in understanding what the Republican agenda is about, whether it is, you know, the Mitt Romneys or the Newt Gingriches. They are pretty consistent in what they believe and what they believe in their vision of the future is that you give more tax breaks to the wealthiest people, despite the fact that we already have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country. Again, you go out on street corners in America and you say to people, do you think it's okay in America? Do you think it's good for the future of this country that the 400 wealthiest people own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million people? Tom, you will find very, very few people who actually believe that. That is what Republicans believe. And they want to see even more inequality through more tax breaks for the wealthy, through more protecting the loopholes and expanding loopholes that large profitable corporations already have. Then you ask people about issues like free trade. Do you think it is a good idea that American companies be allowed to shut down in this country, throw millions of American workers out on the street, move their production lines to China or Vietnam or other third world countries where people are paid pennies an hour, and then bring their products back into this country? And the answer again, and interestingly enough, you have a whole lot of Republicans who say, no, that doesn't make sense. Because people instinctively understand that you cannot have a strong economy for our kids and for the future of this country if you're not producing the products that we consume. We cannot be an economy which simply distributes products made in China. And I think people go Christmas shopping and that's what they see. Harder and harder to buy products made in the United States of America. So I think a progressive agenda is really not that hard to put together. It says we have got to create jobs in the United States right now and deal with the massive unemployment that we currently have, which in real terms is about 15%, 24, 25 million people who are unemployed or underemployed. We've got to put those people back to work, and we've got to do it now. You've got millions of young people right now, people who are graduating college, graduating high school, looking forward to beginning their careers, going out on their own, and they cannot find their first job. And the psychological impact that that has on them for the future of their lives, anxious to get out, anxious to earn a living, anxious to be independent, can't do it because there are no jobs out there. We've got to deal with that reality. And then we've got to deal with another reality equally serious and equally horrific. And that is, you got people today, Tom, 55 years of age, 60 years of age, who have lost their jobs, and either they're now working at another job which pays them substantially less than they used to be making, or even worse, they have come to the realization that at the age of 60, they're never going to get another job again in their lives, and that the retirement hopes that they had for some kind of secure retirement has been shattered because they're not going to have any income. And you're seeing more and more people, by the way, taking Social Security at 62 rather than at 65 or 66, precisely because of that reason. All right. So I think as a nation, what we have got to do is understand that we can create an economy which works for the middle class and working families. We can protect the elderly, the sick, the children, and the poor. We can rebuild our manufacturing sector so that once again we are creating, producing products made here in the United States of America and creating jobs. We can lead the world in reversing global warming by moving aggressively to energy efficiency. As we talk right now, in Vermont, I should tell you, is leading the country in energy efficiency, but I could tell you in this state, there are tens of thousands of buildings right now, today, it's cold here, that are wasting 20, 30, 40% more energy than they should be because of not having their buildings properly weatherized. We can put large numbers of people to work in terms of weatherization, making the doors, making the windows, making the insulation, making the products that we need. We should be moving aggressively to wind, solar, geothermal, other sustainable energies. Last couple of years, we've seen an explosion of solar installations in this country. We can do a lot more. Cost of solar is going down. We've got to start producing the solar panels in this country. Wind is also growing exponentially. In Texas now, they are producing, just in one state of Texas, 10,000 megawatts of electricity, equivalent to 10 nuclear power plants in Texas. Iowa, 20% of their electricity comes from wind. We can be producing these wind turbines, help lead the world by exporting our products around the world in terms of sustainable energy. So there's a progressive vision out there which says that we can have an economy, we can have a healthcare system that works for everybody, not an economic system which benefits the top 1% at the expense of the bottom 99%.
Right, and people get that, and apparently that word is starting to have a positive association.
I think it is. I think we have made, and I think the Occupy Wall Street movement deserves a lot of credit. The media has paid attention to that, and I think people are saying, yeah, enough is enough.
That's absolutely true.
Let's worry about the 99% and not just the 1%.
It's our Brunch with Bernie. Our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. Bernie, we're live on Free Speech TV today, so we'll be right back with that. And we'll be back with your calls for Senator Sanders, 866-987-THOM. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And over at sanders.senate.gov, A, you can sign his constitutional amendment to undo Citizens United, and B, there's a great newsletter you can sign up for. The place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Bernie Sanders with us for our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting with the guy I think of as America's senator, although the fine people of Vermont, and Louise and I were among them for a decade, are very proud that he represents them, Senator Bernie Sanders. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, I wanted to ask Bernie what he thought of the idea in serving the progressive cause to curtail the power of federal courts. I know it's tempting, but I'm not a fan of that, and I think that often the courts protect minority rights and also civil rights as opposed to the will of the majority. So I just was wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, thanks for the question, John. I think this issue has kind of been raised to the fore by Newt Gingrich, who has decided that, I guess, if he, God forbid, were to be elected president, if he did not like a federal court decision, I guess he would not pay much attention to it. I think, basically the Constitution of the United States of America has worked pretty well for a few hundred years, and I think one of the points that the founders made is that we need a division of responsibility, and that we need an independent judiciary to protect the Constitution. Obviously, many of us have a real problem with the current composition of the Supreme Court, which, among other things, by a 5-4 vote, gave us the horrendous Citizens United decision claiming that corporations are people, etc. But I think an independent judiciary made up of intelligent, responsible people is what this country has historically been about and should continue to be about.
Okay. And in Ventura, California, Grant, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Bernie. You're the clearing through the fog. I was wondering, health care is also an issue for progressives, such as Medicare for All.
Yes.
Could you explain how progressive health care is advancing in your own home state of Vermont and your understanding of what progressive health care means?
Excellent. Thank you very much for that question, Grant. And you're absolutely right. Health care, when we talk about basic rights, clearly every one of us is going to get sick. Our families are going to have babies. We're going to die. And health care has got to be a right, R-I-G-H-T. I think in years to come, Tom, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren are going to look back and say, we can't believe that you lived in a nation in which there were millions and millions of people who couldn't go to a doctor when they were sick, or people who got bankrupt. We are losing. Harvard study a couple of years ago indicated we lose about 45,000 people every year. They die because they don't get to a doctor on time. And meanwhile, we spend almost twice as much per person on health care as do the people of any other nation, and our health care outcomes in some respects are worse. So we have a system that needs a total overhaul. It is bureaucratic. It is dominated by private insurance companies whose goal is not the best quality care at the least cost, but is to make as much money as they possibly can. We got a very powerful pharmaceutical industry whose goal is to make as much money as they can while they're charging our people the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, making many drugs unaffordable for people who desperately need them. So clearly, we need a fundamental change in our healthcare system. As Grant indicated, in my state, we have a governor, Peter Shumlin. We have a legislature that is prepared to go forward with a Medicare for All single-payer program. And right now, we've got a committee working on the details. That legislation has already been passed, and we're going forward with it. A lot of details that have to be worked out, because it will not be easy to be the first state in the nation to do that. But I will do everything I can to make sure that happens. And when we do that, when we say that healthcare is a right, that when you get sick, regardless of your income, you go to a doctor, when we put more emphasis on disease prevention, on primary healthcare, when we in a very sensible way, try to attack the escalating cost of healthcare, which is going off the wall, endangering our economy, making it impossible for small business people to provide healthcare. When we understand that we've got to separate the provision of healthcare from business, I mean, the function of business is business. It's not providing healthcare. Healthcare should be a societal responsibility, funded in a progressive and fair way. So as Grant indicates, Vermont is working on that issue right now. We believe that if we do it well, it will become a model for other states and eventually for the country. But at the end of the day, this country must be a nation which says that all of our people are entitled to health care and that we have a high-quality system run in a cost-effective way, and that's the goal.
Janet in Kent, Ohio, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders.
Hi, Janet.
Hi. I would like to ask you a question. This has been probably at least a year ago. I believe he was a German economist who labeled the United States as the first and only underdeveloping nation in the world. And I tend to agree with that. He said there are developed, underdeveloped. The United States is now the only underdeveloping nation in the world.
Developing, ING, as in unraveling.
Yes.
Well, the bad news is that I'm afraid that some of our European friends may be rapidly following us. But thank you for the question, Janet. And here's what I think. I don't know who that German economist was, but the facts are pretty clear. If you look at unemployment now, as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at real unemployment about 15%, which is just horrendous, horrendous for the young people, for old people. We're looking at median family income having gone down by over $3,000 in the last 10 years. You're looking at a shrinking middle class. You're looking at more people in poverty today than has ever been the case. You're looking at an infrastructure which is in serious damage. A healthcare system with 50 million people uninsured. So I would say, Janet, yeah, we are a developed country which is unraveling, and we need to change the nature of our economy to put it together again.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting. Senator Bernie Sanders, check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. And TomHartman.com as well. We'll be right back.
On December 10th, 2010, he conducted a one-man, nine-hour filibuster on the Senate floor to protest a tax bill. Ryan.
Who is Bernie Sanders?
Good for 2000. Yes. You know you're Sanders.
And welcome back to Talk Media for the rest of us. Bernie's, by the way, Bernie's nine-hour filibuster is out as a book. It's called The Filibuster, isn't it, Bernie?
No, it's called The Speech.
The Speech. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's I have a copy around here, and I was honored that you quoted one of my books in your filibuster. Anyhow, welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, immortalized on Jeopardy. And Terry in Tomburg, Virginia, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Terry?
Well, Senator Sanders.
Yes, sir.
It's great to talk with you. We have great admiration for you and for the state of Vermont.
Thank you.
We've seen a lot of progressive things come out of Vermont, including the campaign in 2004, which made creative use of the Internet. I think Barack Obama's campaign picked up on some of that.
Yes.
As a practical matter, to help elect progressives to the U.S. Congress and Senate, is there a guide, a book, a website, or some organization or something you can point to help amateurs learn how to become effective activists to help elect people into the government against the tidal wave of money that's coming? And if there isn't one, could you and Tom Hartman collaborate and create one for us?
Well, Terry, that is a great question. And this is, kind of in Vermont, we've been doing it our own way and developing our own models here, which has been primarily focused on grassroots effort. I do and have done in my political career hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of town meetings open to everybody from our largest cities to our smallest towns. That's kind of the way I do it, and I think that works effectively. There are some really great groups out there. One that comes to mind is called the Wellstone Alliance, named, of course, after the great Senator Paul Wellstone, functioning in Minnesota. And I think there's something to be learned from those guys who put a lot of energy into grassroots organizing. I'm sure there are other organizations as well, and I should know them. But you've asked a very good question, Terry. Tom, do you know anything more about that?
My two favorites are Jim and Howard Dean started Democracy for America. Used
right.
to be Dean, and they have traveling schools where they go around and weekend course. I've taught some of them for them and been in them, and they bring people in for a weekend and teach them how to be activists, both outside the party and inside the party.
Right.
And,
no question about it. We have worked with the DFA.
Yeah.
And they do a great job.
That's a great one.
There are other organizations.
And then the other one is Progressive Democrats of America, Tim Carpenter's organization, pdamerica.org. So democracyforamerica.com, pdamerica.org. There's a few others, but those are my favorite.
We should actually probably spend some time on that. Maybe
put together a list.
Future. Yeah, that's
yeah, because there are some great organizations.
Well,
Move to Amend is good too. They've got a democracy school David Cobb is doing.
And there's another group. It's called Working America.
Yeah, from the AFL-CIO.
Exactly, funded by the AFL. And they do an extraordinary job. And what they do is nothing very complicated. They have well-trained, well-educated, working-class people going out in working-class neighborhoods talking to their neighbors.
Yep.
Not all that complicated. And the results are pretty profound. Because the point is, a whole lot of people in this country really have not been exposed to progressive ideas. They're inundated with Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, right-wing politics, and they have not heard an alternative point of view. So I think grassroots organizations that are breaking through that wall are playing a very significant role, and those are some of them. But I think Terry raises a good question. And in the future, let's sit down and spend some time talking about something.
I'm going to put that on my list for my conversation this weekend with Sue and Nigel, our webmasters, about maybe just throwing a page up that has a list there, and you know, maybe you'll want to do that at some
point. I think I would answer
Terry's
question by saying this. In many ways, it's not all that complicated. I think a lot of it, well, of course, you want to use the internet and all that stuff, but a lot of it has to do with face-to-face discussion, educating people about what's going on, giving people a progressive vision, making sure people understand that in a democracy, they can and must play an important role. And as you and I say, despair is not an option. That if they do not get out and participate politically, trust me, but there are lobbyists in Washington who will fill that void representing the wealthy and the powerful. So mostly it's grassroots activism. I think every state will do it a little bit differently, but I think it might be a good idea for you and I to review some of the best efforts taking place around the country.
Yeah. Great idea for a future show. Charles in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, good afternoon, whichever it is there, sir. I'm wishing you happy holidays, and let's hope it's a better new year.
Good.
The question I have, sir, or an opinion I think I'm interested in, I advocate that we eliminate people in power, and I don't mean in this in a rash way. We do have business, we have opportunities in other countries that should be in this country. Is there no way that we can get that business back into this country, get our people back to work, and be done with it?
You're talking about how do we end free trade?
Yes,
well, let me give you an example of something. I think Charles raises a very important question, which Tom and I talk about a great deal, but it is not talked about terribly much in Congress or in the corporate media. And that is an understanding that a great economy, a great nation, cannot prosper if we are not producing the products or many of the products that we consume. And I think anybody who's been out shopping in the last few weeks knows that it is harder and harder to buy products made in the United States of America. A lot of reasons for that. But one of the reasons is our disastrous trade policies developed over the last 30 or so years. And I have to say, supported by Republicans, supported by Democrats, supported, of course, by the entire corporate world, supported by the Chamber of Commerce, whose leader has said, outsourcing is good. Companies can make money outsourcing. Hey, what's the problem? It's good for the bottom line of corporations. Most Americans don't believe that. And I think that you're not going to have the kind of economy our young people need, the future of this country needs, unless we rebuild our manufacturing sector and once again put people back to work producing the products that we and the rest of the world need. And there are ways to do that, and that means changing our trade policy, whether it's permanent normal trade relations with China, NAFTA, CAFTA, or other trade agreements, which essentially give a green light to companies to throw Americans out on the street and move abroad. Let me give you this one example of something that I have done, and we've got to do, needless to say, a hell of a lot more. And I've mentioned this on the show before. If you go to the Smithsonian museums in Washington, which are great museums, what I was distressed of last year was to find that at the gift shop of these museums, most of the products being sold were not manufactured in the United States of America. And that really upset me. These are publicly, to a significant degree, publicly funded museums representing what is great about our country, our history, our culture, etc. And you had many, many gifts there that were not made in the United States, including literally busts, little statuettes of presidents of the United States. We have worked with the Smithsonian, and I think by within a couple of months, you're going to see a very significant increase in the number of products they are selling made in America. Wasn't easy, but they did it. We're working with the group that sells gifts at the various national parks and monuments around the country. They are making progress as well. But we can and must put pressure on corporate America and say, sorry, if you want us to buy your products, you have got to start manufacturing them in America. It's not going to be an easy struggle, let me tell you something, but it is enormously important economically.
Esther, amen. Esther in New York City, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Happy holidays, Bernie. I signed your petition, and I want to thank you very much for all your hard work, and I hope we do overturn this United Citizens United nonsense. My question is, number one, what do you think of Rocky Anderson and the Justice Party? And even if right now it seems like he doesn't have a prayer, but even if, let's say, he was elected, what do you think is really going to be the logistics of getting money out of politics and fixing all our, you know, problems?
Well, let me just say this. I think it is, to say the least, highly unlikely that a third-party candidate is going to be elected president of the United States now. I think the issue of third-party politics is something worthy of a very long discussion. The question is, can you put together a movement? Can you fund a movement around a progressive agenda? Can you start electing people? And that's simply not going to be very, very easy. That I can tell you. As the longest-serving independent outside of the two-party system in American history. I think right now, at this particular moment, the best that we can do right now is to strengthen the grassroots movement, make progressive demands on the Democratic leadership and on the president, and put people in office who are going to fight for working families. I think that's kind of where we are right now. If there are states and communities where people can get elected outside of the two-party system, I think that's great. We've done it here in Vermont, and it's happening here and there around the country. But I think that ultimately what we have got to do right now is just galvanize working families to stand up and fight for their rights and demand that their elected officials start representing them rather than the top 1%.
It is our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, our national town hall meeting. Senator Sanders taking your calls. Also, he has a constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United, this insane decision by the Supreme Court. You can find it over at his website, sanders.senate.gov. Be sure to check that out, as well as it's a great news site.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can drop into our live chat room and hang out with some of the finest minds on the universe. Maybe some pigeons from Xenu are there, Adam, or at TomHartman.com.
When many little people in many little places do many little things, then the whole world changes, you see. We are looking for the same thing.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And my apologies to all. We had 12 people on hold, Bernie, and we had a some kind of a system failure here. Jacob right now is rebooting the system, so I'd say to anybody who tried to call in or who was on hold waiting for Bernie to call back, we should be able to put your phones on the air. But we just dumped all of our lines. Everything just died, except for you and me and the radio stations and the TV stations. We're still on the air. So, Bernie, your thoughts?
Let's continue that conversation.
Let's continue your conversation.
If you look at how many people are involved in the political process, the answer is not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to, from the ground on up, to get people involved. I can tell you right here, we had a question earlier about Vermont's role in pushing for a Medicare for All single-payer program
mm-hmm.
and having our legislature pass that. That would not have happened without a group called the Vermont Workers Center, who did a great grassroots organizing effort, went to all kinds of meetings, staged meetings, made sure that legislators came and had to respond. But I think, Tom, if we can just increase in any significant way the number of people at the grassroots level who say, you know what, I don't have health insurance, or I can't afford the health insurance that I have, we have got to do a lot better than we're currently doing. We've got to, we heard today what we often hear, people disgusted about the collapse of manufacturing and American jobs being shifted to China and other countries. You got to stand up. You have to hold your elected officials and your candidates accountable on that issue. You have to make sure that we demand that the wealthiest people in this country start paying their fair share of taxes. But I think the goal is to rally the grassroots of this country, get people to understand that in a democracy, that is not only their right, that is their responsibility. That is what they have got to do, not only for themselves, but for their kids and
yeah.
grandchildren. Because if they don't do that, what I can tell you with 100% certainty, in Washington right now, parading around the halls of the House and the Senate, are people being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to represent the wealthy and the powerful. And the only antidote to that is a strong grassroots movement of ordinary people saying, hey, government's got to represent us and not just the people on top.
Yeah, totally agree. I saw a quote from Oscar Wilde the other day. It said words to the effect of, politicians don't lead, they just get out in front of the mob, and we've got to be the mob.
That's absolutely right.
So there it is. Okay, our lines have all filled back up. Paul hasn't had a chance to pre-screen them, so I reserve the right, if somebody's drunk or obscene, to cut them off. But let's start out with the person in area code 831. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, that's me. I'm Catherine. And, Tom, thank you for having him on every Friday.
Sure. Where are you calling from, Catherine?
In Monterey.
Great. Okay. Your question for Bernie?
I have been to the VA in Palo Alto. I'm a veteran, and I shop at the retail store there, and the products are not made in the United States. And I spoke with the man who's in charge of the shop, and he said they purchased them out of St. Louis. And he said they can't find people who manufacture the products in the United States that they want to sell there. So I wanted to bring this to your attention, Senator Sanders. I know you've done a lot of good work, as you mentioned, with the Smithsonian and other government agencies.
Catherine, thank you very much. As a member of the Veterans Committee and somebody very active on veterans issues and somebody working very hard to make sure that at the very least our government agencies start purchasing products made in the United States of America, that is an issue I will look into right away.
Great.
Thank you very much for that call, Catherine.
Kevin in Wilmington, Vermont. You're on the air with your Senator, Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Bernie.
Hey,
good
Kevin.
Afternoon.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. My question today, Bernie, is in light of fuel prices skyrocketing, why does Congress insist on still giving fossil fuel industry subsidies and nuclear subsidies when we desperately need to put those subsidies for green energy projects, and Congress just dropped some subsidies that they were given to the wind and solar and geothermal
right.
industries?
Kevin, thanks for the question, and you're absolutely right. What Kevin is saying is precisely correct. Our government provides ongoing subsidies and exemptions for oil, for coal, for nuclear. And while, of course, we have provided some help to the sustainable energy industry, it is intermittent. It is on a year-to-year basis, which is a very bad way to do business. One of the disasters of what's happening right now is we have not extended a number of the tax breaks for wind and solar, which is going to have a very, very deleterious impact on those industries. Wind and solar have been doing very good, been expanding significantly, creating new jobs in recent years. We have not extended the tax credits and the subsidies that they have gotten in recent years. So I agree very much with Kevin. In my view, the future of the energy of energy in this country is with energy efficiency, wind, solar, geothermal. We've got to protect and help those industries. Oil companies that have made $1 trillion in profits in the last 10 years do not need any more subsidies or tax breaks.
Bernie, we have just a little less than a minute left. Thoughts on this last year and the year coming up?
Well, let us be very clear, and I think many of the callers, you know, make this point. Tom, we are at a pivotal moment in American history. One of the callers quoted a German economist talking about the economy unraveling. Many ways, that's true. Our middle class is disappearing. Poverty is increasing. People don't have health care. Unemployment sky high. Global warming, a problem we have to deal with. I think those problems, all of those problems are solvable, but they are not going to be solved until literally tens of millions of people jump into the political process. And it is not just voting. You got to vote, that's for sure. But you got to be there to, at the grassroots level, to make sure that good people are nominated, good people are elected. You also have to be there to hold candidates and elected officials accountable. And that's the task of people in a democracy. And given these difficult moments, that's what we have got to rejuvenate.
Yep, that's the show up. Tag, you're it. There you go.
That's it.
Bernie, it's so great. It's been such a great year having you on. So many years. Thank you again.
Well, thank you. And again, happy holidays and a wonderful new year to everybody.
Thank you, and to you too.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to your radio and TV support group for We the People of Planet Earth. And what a year it's been. Matt Taibbi online, one of the finest investigative reporters on Earth, contributing editor for Rolling Stone, author of The Great Derangement, and most recently, I believe, Griftopia. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt. Welcome back to the program.
That's right. How are you doing, Tom?
Just great. And, of course, most of you writing over at rollingstone.com. Your most recent piece here, How Banks Cheat Taxpayers, from the Taibbi blog. But I wanted to talk to you about that and the recent things. But also, you know, and the idea that Occupy Wall Street is actually changing our political discourse, which you've written about. But I also wanted to give you a chance to get off your chest what you think was the biggest story of the year that you were reported on. What are you most excited about, Matt Taibbi?
I got to say, Occupy Wall Street. There were a lot of people like me, investigative reporters who were covering Wall Street, and activists and lawyers who've been kind of waiting for the public to kind of show up with their pitchforks and start a movement about a lot of the crimes that we've been watching. And for it to finally happen this year was really amazing and heartening. And I think it's not over. I firmly expect that we're going to see something really, really interesting next year. A lot of the people who cover the campaign, which I'm going to be doing next year, we kind of expect a 1968 style thing to develop over the summer. And I think that's something that is really interesting and unusual. We're just not used to this sort of mass movement here in this country.
It's going to be a new version of Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. Somebody might write that. We'll see what happens. But there's definitely going to be material, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, Matt, if you've had an opportunity to look back at the Hooverville phenomena of the late 20s and early 1930s. There was one, the one in Seattle was probably the most famous of the Hoovervilles. The city burned it down, tore it down. They kept rebuilding it over and over and over again. The guy who was the unofficial mayor of that Hooverville was a fellow by the name of Jesse Jackson, and he wrote a book about it in 1935 about his experience. And what they did was they occupied public space all over the country, built these little shanty towns, and, I mean, they didn't have fancy tents back then. And, a lot of this followed the Bonus Army, the original occupation that went from the lawn of the White House all the way down to the Potomac River, and that President Hoover had busted up. And And if you see any parallels there, it seems to me that that was the first in the streets, constant, in your face. I mean, because it went on for several years. In fact, it went on right up until the 33, really. That pushed Franklin Roosevelt to be as aggressive and gave him the ability to be as successful with Congress as he was with the New Deal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about that, but from what I do remember, I think the Hooverville phenomenon, right, was genuine poor people, right? I mean, it
was people who were out of work.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
and which was, you know, a third of America at the time. So yeah,
right.
But you got a lot of the Occupy Wall Street people are you know, and a lot of those Hooverville people were college educated, or they were, you know, they would have been middle class if they hadn't just been out of work. And that's the same thing you're seeing with Occupy Wall Street. I mean, not identical, but there's a lot of those folks who've got bachelor's and master's degrees, can't find a job.
Yeah, I think you know, there's some parallels there. I would say probably maybe what's more of a parallel is the movement of people not leaving their homes after they've been foreclosed upon.
Which was also going on in the 30s. Franklin Roosevelt, 1935, to create the, I forget the name of the administration now, I want to call it Resolution Trust. That was the one that Reagan did after the crash of the SNLs. But he created this institution that bought these five-year, everybody had five-year balloon mortgages back then. When, mm-hmm. you know, in a Great Depression, that's an exploding mortgage. And so it bought these five-year balloon mortgages, converted them to 30-year fixed rate, you know, 1, 2, 3% at the most, very low interest rate mortgages, fully backstopped by the federal government. And most of them, the early ones, were totally written by the federal government. That program resolved itself in 64 and showed a net profit for the government, and it kept all those people in their homes.
Well, I mean, yeah, clearly.
Yeah, it was called the Federal Housing Administration, the FHA.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I mean, we still have FHA loans today, right? So,
yeah.
I mean,
reincarnated version. Yeah.
I mean, I think we might be heading toward something like that again. I mean, clearly we have an epidemic crisis situation with foreclosures. There's millions of people a year who are getting kicked out of their houses, and it's basically unsustainable. If they don't come up with some kind of solution for that, we're going to have housing prices crater, which is going to, you know, basically destroy most of the personal accumulated savings of, you know, the bulk of the country. So they're going to have to come up with some kind of solution. And I think this, you know, this a little bit of this grassroots movement for people to not leave their houses and force banks to produce their documentation. That and the Occupy Wall Street. Yeah, I definitely see some parallels.
Yeah, I think it's strong stuff. Your piece, How Banks Cheat Taxpayers, on Taibbi blog over at Rolling Stone. Brilliant. Tell us, how do the banks cheat taxpayers?
Well, one of the things that people don't really understand is that almost none of the financial services contracts that are out there, where states and cities and municipalities, when they go to banks and they do bond issues or bond auctions, four out of five of those contracts are not publicly bid on, so they're not competitive deals. They're directly awarded to companies like J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and Bank of America.
Right.
And so there's an enormous amount of price inflation that goes on there. The taxpayers are massively overpaying these banks for public services, which just doesn't happen that often in other kinds of public contracting. It does go on in the military, and, you know, one of the most famous no-bid contracts was the Halliburton bid for Iraq. But it's not commonplace the way it is with financial services. And so the banks routinely overcharge taxpayers for this stuff, and especially when it comes to things like derivatives, where there's no public price listing for these services. So a lot of these kind of small town governments or local governments, they don't know what a good price is for, say, you know, an interest rate swap deal, and so they let themselves be overcharged by a factor of two or three sometimes.
Wow.
By these companies.
Wow. So the banksters are making 200-300% profit on the fact that there's a non-transparent marketplace?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the metaphor that I use is it's kind of like, you know, if you imagine what gambling on the NFL would be like if the casinos didn't publish the point spreads every week, you know, how many points would you give the Jets against the Dolphins this week? Well, you know, the casinos know because they're taking all that action what the real number is.
Right.
But, you know, the public doesn't know. So if they didn't publish that information, which they don't, in the derivatives market, there are no publicly traded exchanges for swaps, then the financing that you get, you're almost inevitably going to be overpaying for it, and that's how they make their money.
Matt, in the minute we have left, I believe you were the one who created the metaphor of the giant squid.
Yeah, for
Goldman Sachs. Any progress on reining in the banksters in America? They're now 30% of our economy. It's insane.
No, I don't think so. Although I will say that this this Occupy Wall Street thing is definitely creating some pressure on them for sure. They're holding the state is going to be holding hearings into some of the banking practices now, and that never happened before. And I think a lot of that is responding directly to, the pressure that the protesters are creating.
Yeah.
And so that's good news.
Amen. I'm absolutely with you. Occupy Wall Street is the best thing that has happened in a long, long time. Matt Taibbi, thanks so much for the great reporting you're doing, Matt.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom.
You can read it over at rollingstone.com and, of course, his most recent books, Griftopia and The Great Derangement. We will be back. Oh, what do you do about telemarketers?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I gotta tell you a story about telemarketers right after this. Okay, so... You know, a lot of us don't have landlines anymore. We don't have published phone numbers. And for a long time, as a consequence of that, you know, we have cell phones instead. I've got mine here. And, in fact, you might have heard it ring last week while I was on the air. It usually doesn't. And it turned out it was, I didn't answer it. It rolled in a voicemail and it was a telemarketer. And I'm like, what happened? You know, a couple of weeks ago, there was some guy on TV saying, text me this for a poll or something like that. I texted it in, and I think my phone number's been sold. And so it's like, now I'm getting telemarketer calls. And, you know, we had this pass for a while on cell phones, but the telemarketers are figuring out there's a really active market in cell phone numbers. The polling companies will buy them. The telemarketing companies will buy them. If you can figure out a way to get cell phone numbers from people, you can make some serious bucks. And so now they've got our cell phone numbers. And there is no do not call list for cell phones, or if there is, it doesn't work. And it doesn't work like we all thought. And so we need to get creative and fight back. And there's a guy named Tom Mabe who for years and years back, you know, when telemarketing, you know, back when it was landlines, Tom was on this. He was way ahead of the curve. And he has turned answering telemarketing calls into a sport. And I would love to get your thoughts on how you do these kind of things. Let me give you an example of something that Tom Mabe, you can see this over at Tom Mabe's website, tommabe.com. But here's a clip from a telemarketer. This is a real clip, real telemarketer calling Tom Mabe and Tom playing this guy like a fish.
Yes, can I speak with Tom Mabe?
Who's calling?
Well, this is Mike Stewart with Network. You've been selected to receive a complete digital satellite system for free. With this, you're going home.
Let me ask you something. Did you know Tom Mabe? Were you a friend of his?
No, I'm not. I'm just calling to...
Hold on one second. All right? Hey, guys, get really good pictures of the body. Yeah, and dust everything down for print. Mike, you there?
Yeah.
Let me bring you up to speed. You've actually called a murder scene. Now, Mr. Mabe is no longer with us. I'm Officer Clark. I'm conducting a homicide investigation. I want to ask you a series of questions. First of all, what was the nature of the business you had with Tom Mabe?
I had no business with him. I'm sorry to bother you.
No, hold on. Look, I want to ask you to stay on the phone. This call's already been traced, and we may need you to come in for further questioning.
You don't understand. I'm just calling on...
No, look, you don't understand. I just want to be charged with obstruction of justice. It's imperative you keep your ass on the phone, Mike.
Well, how about you just talk with my supervisor then?
No, look, we'll get your supervisor in a second here. First of all, give me your whereabouts.
I'm at work.
You're at work?
Yes.
You being a smart?
No, sir.
Let me put it to you this way, Mike. Say, Say I wanted to mail your letter.
What would I have to write on the outside of that envelope to assure the mailman would deliver it right to your ass? Where is work?
4715 West Street.
Now, hold on. That's 478?
Yes, sir.
Michael, hold on one second, all right?
Yes.
Get the Louisville Police Department Homicide Division on the phone. Give him this information. Tell him he's being sought in connection with a fatal shooting and aggravated robbery.
How did you know Mr. Mabe again?
Well, wait, you're calling the Littleton Police Department? I'm hundreds of miles away. I don't even know the guy. I'm in Colorado.
No, don't let that scare you. That's just a formality.
Have you ever been to his place of residence?
No.
And tell me again, where were you last night between the hours of 8 and 10?
I'm not feeling real comfortable about any of this.
Have you even ever spoken with Mr. Mabe, Mike?
No, I haven't. I don't even know the guy. That's what I've been trying to tell.
Okay, just calm down. Calm down. Hold on. Look, just back up. I got one more question for you, Mike. As you well know, I'm sure, Mr. Mabe was a flaming homosexual. And there's no easy way of asking that. I don't want to embarrass you or nothing, but were you his gay lover?
What? No. What the hell kind of a question?
Look. If gay is your way, that's okay. I still know there's a lot of you gay people in the closet. I'm not saying I haven't thought about myself, you know. Say I was in Las Vegas or something. A couple drinks, cute little Mexican midget.
This is ridiculous.
It goes on like that. And this, I've got a couple others that I want to play for you as the day goes on. But it's like, what do you do when you know, we've got to start getting creative. What do you do? How do you deal with telemarketers? Jacob, when he called Tom Mabe yesterday and not as a telemarketer and said, you know, we'd like to play a couple of your clips on our show because they're just so good. I mean, here's Tom Mabe. This guy's calling to sell him something. He never even got around to saying what it was, you know, life insurance or something. Hi, this is a murder scene. How'd you know Mr. Mabe? Boom. You know, what are you doing? And we're even actually starting to get telemarketers calling our radio call-in lines, you know, 1-866-987-THOM. We got to come up with some ideas for that. So if, you know, how do you handle the telemarketer calls? And, you know, what have you done in your life? Well, anyway, what Tom said he's doing is, and in fact, I'll play one of these for you, you know, after the break at the bottom of the hour. He's starting to play. He's answering the phone. 911. Where's your emergency? And the telemarketer goes, I'm not. You know what, sir? And it's just, well, you'll hear it. It freaks them out quite effectively. So, what's the best way to deal with telemarketers other than just like never answering the phone and just letting everything roll to voicemail? Unless you recognize the name on the phone. You know, the other thing that occurs to me is that cell phones are almost universally, I believe 100% universally now, digital technology. So there is caller ID, and it should be possible to program your phone just like you program your email. You know, you can have a spam list, an email, and say, okay, you know, this person sends me an email every single day. I just don't want to see them anymore, so you just mark it as spam, and they all go to a spam folder. I got a spam folder right now. It's got 11,612 emails in it from the last 30 days. Seriously, why can't we do that with our phones? We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And, of course, if you want to talk about politics, that's fine, too. I got to tell you why. The most amazing reason why I think Paul Ryan might get taken down in the next election right after this, too.
All I've got is
minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom Mabe has figured out the way to deal with telemarketers. He punks them. He pranks them. He plays them back. Clip 3, Jacob. This is a short one, and then I'm going to pick up. I know some of you have suggestions. I'm going to pick up some of your calls on the topic. This is Tom Mabe getting a call from a carpet cleaning salesperson. Here you go.
Hello. Yes. Hello. Is this Mr. Mabe?
Yes, Mr. Mabe.
Mr. Mabe, this is Todd from Gooby Carpet Cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
We're calling people in your area to tell you about our $29.90.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe you called. Look, can you guys get blood out of the carpet?
I
got blood all over the place, man. Oh, God.
Okay, sure.
I got it on the drapes. I got it on the couch. I got it all over the place. Oh, man. Look, I got to go. Bye.
There's another one. Did you edit that, or is that? Yeah. Oh, you cut it. You shrunk it down. Yeah, it's 3 minutes. It's actually 3 minutes long, and there was this whole long piece in the middle where the guy is like, "Do I need to call the police? No, don't call the police. I'll double your salary if you'll come out here and clean this yourself." You know, and the kid is, he's just anyhow. It's hysterical. All righty, David in Suffield, Connecticut. David, you have an idea about how to deal with telemarketers?
Oh, I got a definite way for your home line, right?
Okay.
What you do is you go to the Edge company. They have a catalog that you can get, right?
Right.
And in that catalog is a unit called the call screener, right?
Right.
And you plug it into your phone, and anybody that calls you has to know the secret code, right? It's a 4-digit code.
Ah.
And without knowing that code, it can't ring through.
Ah, okay. All right. So that's a technological fix. So that's a good one. That's a good one.
And it's called the telescreener.
Okay. It just doesn't work on cell phones.
Yeah, it doesn't work on cell phones, but if you want to beat the system, and it makes your phone virtually an unlisted phone because
right.
You don't even have to pay the charges for an unlisted phone by having it.
Right. Okay. Good idea. James in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. You have some ideas?
Yeah, this is James. And Tom, what I did recently, there was a telemarketer kept calling, wanted to know if I had more than $10,000 in credit card debt, and they wanted to help me settle that debt.
Uh-huh.
So I played along with them, and I got the information, and what the information was from a law firm in Florida.
Uh-huh.
They sent me this information in the mail.
Right.
So the very next day, this guy called me and wanted to know if I got the package and wanted to know if I was going to send my information in to him. Then I broke the news to him that I was on a do not call list, and I didn't appreciate them calling me like they had been doing, and that I was going to turn this information over to the state attorney general. And he almost begged me not to do it, and he assured me that they'd never call me again. And what they're doing, they're using these telemarketers in foreign countries such as
right.
India, the Philippines, to call you on a landline, and then they can get around your do not call list that way because
they're outside
they can't
the country.
Trace that call back.
Right. And in fact, the one I got last night on my cell phone on caller ID showed as a 202 area code, and I'm here in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C., which is 202, although my cell phone is not a 202 area code. It's another one. And
uh-huh.
But in any case, the guy was clearly I shouldn't say clearly. It sounded like he was calling from India or the Philippines, based on both
mm-hmm.
the amount of noise on the line and the thickness of his accent. And
right.
and then Louise got one day before yesterday, and she said, "Do put me on your do not call." And as she got into the word call, they dumped him that fast. So James, thanks for the call, and thanks for sharing that. This is the other thing Louise and I used to do back when we had a landline and we had a listed number back about 10, 15 years ago, we had to do away with the listed phone number because I started publishing books and started getting all these strange calls, back when we had a listed number, we used to just play the telemarketer. We had a competition between the two of us. How long can you keep them on the phone? Because after a minute or two, they want to move on to the next call, you know. So they call and they say, "How you doing?" And you go, "Well, I don't know. My arthritis is kind of, you know." Or you start telling them kids, story about your kids and things like that. And eventually they freak out and hang up. Linda in Seattle. Hey, Linda, what's your suggestion?
Well, I was getting so many telemarketer calls on my landline. I had them all forwarded, all my calls forwarded to my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't a number I recognized, I just let it ring. And then I Googled it. And if it was someone I don't know or didn't want to call from, I'd just file it under X.
Ah, okay. So it comes
it
up as X on your phone.
I just file. Yeah, and then I just silence the ring if they call back.
Yeah.
I can tell who is in call I don't want.
Okay, well, that's a strategy.
It worked pretty well for me.
Yeah, okay. But you still have to put up with the inconvenience of, you know, you're in the middle of a conversation and suddenly your phone's vibrating, even if it says X on it.
Right. Or ring,
you know, it's there should be a way for us to, for you not have to say X, but for you to be able to, say your phone company's Verizon or AT&T or whatever, for you to be able to, like, go on a website and say, here's my phone number and here's my do not call list and put these phone numbers in. And those people, when they call, they get automatically blocked. Or do it in your phone. I mean, here's maybe this is the kind of thing. I don't think the smartphone companies let programmers get into the phone software. But if they did, this would be a great business opportunity for somebody who wanted to develop an app for smartphones that, you know,
right.
you can create your own do not call list. Very interesting. Thank you very much for the call, Linda, and thanks for the idea. Rad in Santa Fe. Rad, you have some thoughts?
Yes, I just have a landline, and I keep getting unsolicited calls, even though I'm on the federal don't call list.
Uh-huh.
I called an 800 number yesterday after one of these calls and was told that, unfortunately, this scam's coming from Canada.
Right. They're all moving outside the United States, so they can ignore the do not call list.
Okay. The other warning that I got from this federal no-call number that I called was, be careful. If you respond by turning these, they say, press a number.
Right.
They can do you.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes if you call back, you're calling back at $20 a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so
and that's...
I keep my bear whistle right there by the phone, and I let loose with it.
Okay, well, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Get wrong.
Okay, Rad, thank you very much for sharing that. Let me play clip 5. This is another one from Tom Mabe. This guy has got this down to an art form. He gets a telemarketer call from a funeral home. Listen to this.
Hello? Mr. and Mrs. Mabe in, please.
This is Mr. Mabe.
Hi, Mr. Mabe. This is Bob Watson, and I'm calling you from Evergreen Cemetery. How are you today?
Yeah. Not that good.
I'm sorry. Well, listen, the reason I'm calling you today is to offer you a peace of mind through prearranged burial plots.
Uh-huh. And
allow you to rest assured that all of the details, you know, can be taken care of for you. Sir?
Bob, you're not going to believe this. I lost my job Thursday.
Oh.
Company closed shop. My wife left me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm sitting, but this is so bizarre. I was sitting here just contemplating suicide, and I was praying, asking God for a sign, and you called.
Yeah, but I'm just doing my job.
I know, but something's in control. I don't know what it is, but I mean, you're the angel of death, man. I could use your services here. I mean, you know, what? How much is this stuff?
Well, you know, we have different price ranges for different sort of, you know, plots.
So it is kind of expensive, though, some of it?
Well, it's very affordable, and this way you can take care of all of it.
Do you do financing down there?
Mr. May, you know, you just got done saying that you're thinking of taking your life. You know, do you have a credit card?
We're not going to give you financing.
Hold on.
If I got the paperwork out to you, say, this afternoon, do you think you could maybe hold off until tomorrow?
No, I don't know. I'm going through with this.
Is there anybody that I can call?
At the very end, you hear this gun go off, and the guy's going, oh, no. Ron in Clearbrook, Minnesota. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Same thing that I'm calling about. Just laughing about that last clip from Mr. Mabe. My suggestion is to let the caller know that you are currently on the stool suffering from severe intestinal distress, and if they wanted to listen in, to please remain on the line.
Say what, Jacob? Okay, thank you. Yeah, that would do it. That would definitely do it. Thank you very much. Jim in Bellflower, California. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. But I'll get better. How about you?
I'm working on it. Yeah. I've got a network marketing business.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get a call, I have a green technology. And when I get a call, I just say, well, I've been waiting for your call. Let me tell you about my business, and then I'll listen to you about yours.
So you try to sell to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and then let me give you my website, and don't go away, you know. What kind of money are you making there with what you're doing right now? And
that's great.
Sometimes I get some response. But
you actually
made it around on it.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah,
Jim.
I've been waiting for your call.
I've been waiting for your call, Jim. That's brilliant. Thank you very much. By the way, if you want to learn more about Tom Mabe, he's got actually albums of his prank calls or his pranking real telemarketers. It's over at his website, Tom, T-O-M, Mabe, M-A-B-E .com. And thanks to him for letting us play some of his clips on our show. I know there's a wellspring of creativity in America. We'll solve this problem.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So now that they're figuring out sneaky ways to get your cell phone number, and we have to deal with this all over again, I thought we were over this years ago.
I love to laugh loud and long and clear.
That's from Mary Poppins, apropos of our Tom Mabe segment. We'll get back to how do you deal with telemarketers in just a moment. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the new book Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st by Ellen Ratner and Ann Gaiman. And Victoria, what do you do when telemarketers call you?
I usually try and find out what it's about, but generally speaking, I tell them, look, I'm on deadline. I'm a journalist on deadline. I'm sorry, I can't talk right now.
Oh, you're one of those polite people who explains herself.
Yeah, I am.
Wow.
I guess
that's in character. You know, that's in character.
I'm originally English.
Yes.
And then if they persist, I say, look, I can't talk to you.
Okay.
Then the veneer drops.
There you go. So what's going on in the world?
The U.S. and Saudi Arabia have signed a $30 billion agreement to provide the U.S. to provide F-15 combat aircraft to the Royal Saudi Air Force.
Wow! This is the same Saudi Arabia that just executed a woman for witchcraft.
That would be them.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, that would be 84 new aircraft, the modernization of 70 existing aircraft, as well as munitions, spare parts, training, maintenance, and logistics, including night vision goggles. All the better to see the witches with.
Yes, no doubt.
And now, of course, the Saudi Arabia is a major opponent, of course, of Iran, and the Obama administration is looking to counter Iranian threats in the region. And, of course, we have two threats this week from Tehran, warning it could disrupt traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, vital Persian Gulf oil transport route. But, of course, this deal has been in the works for some considerable time.
Yeah.
Now, the plan did initially raise concern from pro-Israeli lawmakers, but the U.S. Officials did reassure Congress that Israel's military edge wouldn't be undercut by the sale. And, of course, the enemy of your enemy is my friend. Israel doesn't like Iran either.
Right. And what's so ironic about all this, and what has, I guarantee it will not be reported in the mainstream press, but is very much the reality, is that traditionally, I mean, you know, for 30 years or longer, well, at least since the revolution in, what was it, 78, and the students seizing the government, from that point forward, our bulwark in the Middle East against Iran was Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
He was the guy that we funded. We gave him information. He lost 1 million soldiers. We gave him intelligence. We supported him in the war against Iran. He was the guy who blocked Iran on our behalf. And then George Bush, like an idiot, took him out. And so now we're turning Saudi Arabia into that role, apparently.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I shouldn't say George Bush like an idiot took him out. It's much more complex than that. But
it's very complex.
Yes.
Yes. And it's interesting that you mention Iran, because, of course, there was the Iran-Iraq war. And the Obama administration is, in fact, moving ahead with the sale of nearly $11 billion worth of arms and training for the Iraqi military. This at the same time that there are real concerns that Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is trying to sort of consolidate authority. As you know, we've been reporting recently on the arrest of the vice president, a Sunni,
right,
and massive arrests of Sunnis, and that al-Maliki's trying to create sort of a one-party Shiite-dominated state.
Right, and for those who don't or don't remember or can't keep the scorecard straight, Iran is Shia, and
right.
Saddam Hussein was Sunni, and
right.
so he was the Sunni wall. Saudi Arabia is Sunni. They're now going to be the Sunni wall against the Shia Iranians, and to hyper-simplify. And the
yeah.
vice president of Iraq, who just got arrested, is Sunni. And so there's a concern. And by the way, the biggest bank in Iraq right now is the Bank of Iran. And
right.
so, I mean, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, so George W. Bush basically handed Iraq over to Iran. And so now we've got to arm Saudi Arabia. Tell me this isn't nuts.
It is very complicated.
Yes, okay. That's a good word from a journalist. Okay,
it's
so what's
very
that? What else is going on?
Well, as you know, we have the Iowa caucuses next week, and then the following week we have the New Hampshire primary, where Top Radio News Service will be.
Yes.
And polls are coming out, and they start to matter now, and they're getting very interesting. And I'm predicting Romney will be the nominee. That is my prediction,
We've all known that all along. Everything else has just been theater.
We have. But there's a new Iowa poll that may understate Ron Paul's support. It's very interesting. Nate Silver of 538 is reporting this, and I think it's worth re-reporting because he's making the point that some of the polls are reporting registered Republican voters and that they are not and also registered Republicans, and
right.
they're not including independents and Democrats, and that in Iowa they can show up and register or re-register as Republicans at the caucus site, and
right.
they do.
And by the way, they don't require ID.
Golly.
There's no photo ID requirement for the Republican primary. The Republicans who are passing voter ID laws in state after state after state, particularly states with large minority populations or large Democratic populations or large student or urban populations, the Republicans who are passing these laws in state after state in their own Republican primary in Iowa, the first in the nation, the most important, according to them, they're not requiring photo ID. Isn't that entertaining?
Okay. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So what else is up?
Well, the Postal Service's closure review process was flawed. You know, they identified more than 3,600 post offices and retail operations to study for closure
right.
and recommended they should be studied. Well, the Postal Regulatory Commission overlooked this and said, no, we challenged their methodology. It didn't optimize the choices. They don't have good data, which tells them which post offices will continue to grow or be on a downhill path. And basically, they got it wrong.
No, that's interesting. I'll bet that they're also getting a lot of pressure from both Democratic and Republican lawmakers, even the Republicans who put in the poison pill, you know, to fund 75 years worth of health benefits in 10 years and thus hurt the post office.
Huge.
They've got local constituents who are saying, wait a minute, you want to close my post office?
They're getting huge pressure from Congress.
Yeah, that's got to be incredible. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the new book, Self-Empowerment, 9 Things the 19th Century Can Teach Us About Living in the 21st by Ellen Ratner and Ann Gaiman. Victoria, thank you.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you do? Now there are, you know, it used to be that if you didn't want to get telemarketing calls, well, it used to be there weren't that many. And they used to be fairly polite. And you figured, you know, it's you know, somebody trying to make a living. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, a guy down the street or, you know, somebody that you could identify. You say, oh, you know, I just don't want to buy that right now. I mean, I have a certain empathy for people who do sales like that. I actually, when I was 16 years old, sold light bulbs on the telephone for a month. It was a job that I got before I got a job at Henry's Hamburgers. And light bulbs and nylon stockings, of all things. So I've been there and done that. And, you know, it was... what can you say? And it was long ago and far away, and people were polite. And I was polite. And then the telemarketers got more and more persistent, and then they got more and more obnoxious, and now they're not even calling from the United States, and it's not some guy down the road trying to make a living. It's some giant industry in Europe or whatever, although they do have a telemarketing conference, apparently, every year here in the United States. All the telemarketers get together. Well, actually, let me finish my original thought. My original thought was, and so then we went to cell phones, and cell phone numbers were not published, and so nobody knew what your phone number was. And so for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years since Louise and I just disconnected our home number, we didn't get any telemarketing calls. And now in the last couple of weeks, we're starting to get telemarketing calls. And I'm not sure why. It might be because I responded to a television poll or something. I'm not sure exactly why, but somebody got a hold of my cell phone number and has sold it to a telemarketer. And so anyhow, these telemarketing companies have, and it's an industry, right? It's a business and it's an industry, and they have an annual conference. So I was telling you about Tom Mabe. Tom Mabe is a guy who makes. He's actually kind of turned it into making a living. You can see it over at his website, Tom Mabe, MABE.com. Punkin' telemarketers. And he went to a telemarketer conference and got the room number of a senior executive, I believe it was, with one of the telemarketing companies. Couldn't get his home number, right? But the guy's at the conference. And here's what he did.
Hello?
Hi, sir. This is Tom Mabe down the front desk. I'm sorry to bother you so late. Mm-hmm. Our computer crashed. Was your wake-up call for 8 or 8:30?
Oh, it was 8 o'clock.
Okay, sir. Sorry to bother you. Thanks a bunch.
It's okay. Hello?
Sir, I'm sorry about it. It's Tom down the front desk. I forgot to ask you. What room were you in?
I don't know. Don't you have it in your system down there?
Yeah, again, our computer crashed. Look, if you look in the back of your key, it could be in your key, or actually the key of the envelope your little key came in.
It's around here. See, I don't know where it is. It's around here somewhere.
Sorry, I hate to ask you this. I want you to get back to sleep. It may be quicker if you just go to your door and open up your door and the number will be.
Okay, just a sec. Hang on. I'll get it. Okay, it's room 289.
Okay, great.
Well, what time is it?
It's
4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's right at 4 o'clock in the morning. We'll call you here in a few hours and get you up.
Well, look, I just want to tell you, I think this is very unprofessional.
Mm-hmm. Are you here with the telemarketing convention?
Yes, I am.
Sir, are you there?
Yes.
I am. I talked to the manager. We usually don't do this, but I told him the situation and your concerns about getting back to sleep. So here you go. Rock-bye, baby.
Oh, for crying out loud. Hey, buddy.
Wind blows your cradle.
That's Tom Mabe calling a telemarketing industry executive at 4 a.m. in his hotel room at the telemarketing convention. And, oh, man. Okay, Greg in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you're looking good today.
Thank you. Thank you. What's on your mind?
What I do with telemarketers and bill collectors as well, when they call and continue to persist to call, is I tell them, I'm sorry you've reached this number. This is a business, and I charge a $29.95 service fee for this call. Where do I send the bill?
Okay. Or maybe you could convince them that they've reached the kind of number that automatically charges their phone.
Yeah,
that's
another
you have to learn the language of it.
I own my own little business, and I say, you're going to charge me service fees. I'm charging you service fees. It's a way of fighting back against corporate greed for me.
Okay, that's a good one. Greg, thank you very much for the call. Steve in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Oh, Tom, I'm a telemarketer.
Okay. Hi.
But I should preface that by saying I'm a good telemarketer.
Yes, I can actually understand your English, unlike the guy who called last night.
Okay, right. I'm from the U.S., and I've been doing telemarketing for 20 years.
Wow.
And the reason is because it works. It actually works for my business.
Uh-huh.
I have a product that I market in the U.S. and Canada, and I can't, you know, go to meet with, you know, all my customers. So I call them. That's telemarketing.
Right. Well, cold calling, I mean, every business I've ever owned, we've had salespeople who do call, you know, business-to-business cold calling.
Right, and that's what I do, but I am a telemarketer.
Okay.
Also, email doesn't work, mail doesn't work.
Right.
Telemarketing works.
Sure.
But I have tips for, you know, I don't like getting calls either. But what I do, I don't get telemarketing calls very often, but I use my caller ID and I never answer. I mean, what this guy's doing is really cool. It's cute, but I don't have the energy for all that. What I do is I Google the number. Okay, I take the number from my caller ID and I Google the number, and you'll see who's calling me from this number, and
right.
you'll get a bunch of, you know, feedback of who's calling you from that number. And mine, when I do get them, it'll be someone trying to slam my phone.
Right.
But what I do then is I block the number on my phone. And I'm on the West Coast, and I have what used to be Quest, and I can block 15 numbers.
Oh, really?
At a time.
So you can actually create a spam list with your phone.
Yes, on my phone, and all the majors do that. And basically, I put the number in, and I haven't used 15 yet.
Yeah.
And that's it. I don't get those calls anymore.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to figure out how to do that with my cell phone. And by the way, guess what, Steve? We have caller ID here now. I now have your number. Do you go to telemarketing conferences?
No, you don't, because I'm unlisted.
See,
that's another thing I do.
Okay, how
my
about,
number's on...
does 6445 sound familiar to you?
Yeah, it does.
Wow.
The last four digits of your phone number. I got the whole thing here. I'm not going to say it on the air.
Okay, unbelievable, but...
Yeah, we also, by the way, we get, you know, we have a comment line, and people call our mm-hmm. comment line constantly, and,
right.
and I get some of the snarkiest, nastiest, you know, you're friggin', you know,
you
all full
number.
Of obscenity and all these people, you know, you liberal, blah, blah, and... It's like it's got caller ID. I've got their ID, and I'm
so tempted.
Yeah,
well,
you must
have some fancy system then, an industrial strength system, because I have an unlisted number.
Yeah,
and
we
when
do.
I call friends, it shows up.
It is an industrial strength system, because we actually get death threats and things, and the FBI wants
right.
to know the real numbers. And
I found with telemarketing is they have these fancy systems. Like if you're on the phone, you get a beep coming through.
Yeah.
Very well as a telemarketer, because they know you're on the phone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
you get telemarketing calls from an area code where you call, and you'll think it's someone you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
they
that was.
Have, they,
go ahead.
They have, you know, these systems like you do. If you want to do something really nasty, now I've never done this, but a boat horn.
That would work. Yeah, I'm. You know, it's like I've got all these spam calls, these calls from people who call our comment line and swear at me and stuff, and I've got their phone numbers, but I've never had the. I've never been angry enough to call them back, you know?
It's just people. We don't have that.
Yeah.
You know, you have a commercial system.
Yeah.
And anyway.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah, thank you. Good talking to you, Steve. And,
okay,
and thanks for being an ethical telemarketer. You know, and I understand, business-to-business telemarketing, I've done that my whole life in every business I've ever had. But consumer telemarketing, it's a little tougher.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you do with telemarketers? Yeah, we got some interesting ideas here. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our last day live this year. And so it's the last day live of our fundraiser for the New England Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School. And I just wanted to remind you, with a $250 contribution, we'll send you, or actually a Hunter School will send you, these were donated by Barrett Kohler, our publisher, autographed copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, which is my most recent book, and published by Barrett Kohler. And Louise and I came up with this idea a couple days ago. We live here in Washington, D.C., where politicians routinely say to lobbyists that they'll go to dinner with them for money. So let's learn from that. And you can even lobby us. But with a $1,000 gift to the Salem Children's Village or the Hunter School, or you know, either one, I mean, it's all kind of the same pot. With a $1,000 gift to hunterschool.org or salemchildrensvillage.org, you're going to have to figure out how to get to Washington, D.C., but we will take you to the TV studio in the evening, and you can watch from the back of the control room, which is like being on the deck of the Starship Enterprise, watch the show being produced and recorded. and then Louise and I will take you to dinner on our nickel. We'll pick up the tab for dinner at your choice of there's a couple of good restaurants around, Mexican and pizza and whatever. Anyhow, in the neighborhood. And that's with a $1,000 contribution. So SalemChildren'sVillage.org and HunterSchool.org. And that, you know, what I just said was for the $250 donation for a book or a $1,000 donation for dinner with Louise and me. But please, if $10 is all you can afford to give, or $15 or $25 or $30, although I can't, you know, Barrett Kohler has a limited number of books that they can give us for free, and Louise and I have a limited number of nights that we can go out to dinner with people and buy them dinner. So I can't offer anything other than a big thank you and a receipt, a tax-deductible receipt. But any amount is really important, particularly at this time of year. It's a time when the heating expenses in New England are really high. It's been a really tough year for the Hunter School and Salem Children's Village, in part because school districts are paying their bills late. Some are not even paying at all. It's the economy is in the dumpster, as they say, and it's hurting charities as well as everybody else. So if you could please go to HunterSchool.org and SalemChildren'sVillage.org, you can see all about the work that we do and have been doing since 1978, when Louise and I started the Salem Children's Village, and then about a decade and a half ago started the Hunter School to serve the kids that were there. And you know, make up your own mind, but, you know, hopefully you'll decide to make a contribution. So I'm going to truncate our fundraising pitch. I'll just end it right here. I think I've said everything I have to say and don't need to pound on it. Let's get back to how do you fight back against telemarketers? What do you do? What do you do? Pete in Tyler, Texas. Pete, you have some suggestions?
Hi, Tom. I just I don't have Tom Abe's imagination. A nice way to, or a way to get rid of these people, or at least to maximize their input and minimize yours, is to just say, gosh, I'm really interested in what you have to say, but somebody's knocking my door. I'll be right back. And then just put the phone down and walk away and go back to whatever you're doing.
And see how long it takes them to hang up.
Well, they'll eventually hang up, and then you'll get this beep, 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 beep,
right,
on your phone, and you can go in and hang it up.
Then you go hang it up. Yeah.
Way it takes the maximum amount of their time with the minimum amount of your time invested.
Right. That's a reasonable variation on the old, what Louise and I did for a while, which, you know, back years ago, which was just having a competition between the two of us to see how long we could keep them on the line before they figured out that we were just playing them. But increasingly, I think they're getting a little more sophisticated about that.
That system takes up your time.
Yeah,
so you can
you're
go
right.
Back to whatever it was you were doing before the phone rang.
This way doesn't. That's a good point, Pete. Thank you very much for the call. Great. I appreciate it. Paul in L.A. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Tom, what I'm about to suggest should be reserved for when you get really annoyed, like when you get a lot of calls from these fellow marketers.
Right.
And that is to ask them what they're wearing. follow through. Stay with me, Tom. Stay with me.
And tell them what you're wearing.
Tell them what I'm wearing.
In your imagination.
Some sweet nothings.
Right.
What you doing? What you thinking?
Right.
And just keep that up, because you might as well have fun.
Right.
And they might decide to join, do 900 numbers instead.
Yeah.
Or realize that. I feel sorry for them.
They
do need that job.
People trying to make a living, I understand. But
After a while, instead of using the most horrible profanity, which I have used in the past, I might say, have fun, you know? I mean, just
sure.
Be creative.
Yeah, there you go.
Happy New Year, Tom.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you too, Paul. Tis the season for lightness. In fact, here's how Tom Mabe answers all of his or he's now he's answering telemarketing calls this way. Here it is, clip two.
911, what is your emergency?
That's
what?
Tom.
Well, this is 911. Do you have an emergency?
I'm sorry. I didn't call 911.
No, it's illegal to prank call 911. Are you aware of that?
I wasn't prank calling 911. I was trying to call Tom.
What if someone had a real medical emergency but couldn't get through because you're occupying this line? 911, please hold.
Are you kidding me?
What if one of your friends or loved one needed the assistance of a law enforcement but couldn't get through because you're prank calling 911? 911, please hold.
Okay, look. I did not call 911.
What business are you calling with? It's for my information here.
Your research group.
Okay, this is going to go down in my report. What's your full name, please? Ma'am.
She just freaks out and hangs up. He's like, 911. So when I see phone numbers that I don't recognize on my phone, I think I'm going to start answering. I think Tom Mabe has got it. You can see his clips over at TomMabe.com, by the way. And thanks to Tom for giving us permission to use his copyrighted material on our show and share it with you. Yeah, there's some great ones over there. We'll be back. And we'll get into some politics and news and things as well, but this is so much fun. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, the bad, and the insanely ugly, and your calls. Yep, that's the good, the bad, and the very, very, very courteously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good. U.S. District Judge Murray Snow. Last week, Snow issued a ruling against America's so-called Sheriff Joe Arpaio, putting a halt to Arpaio's crusade against undocumented immigrants. The ruling puts an end to the sheriff's habit of arresting people solely on suspicion that they might be here illegally. It also opens the door to a class action lawsuit to allow anyone who's been stopped, searched, or detained illegally to sue Arpaio's office. As a statement from the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project read after the ruling, quote, "The court's injunction on our illegal seizure claim is a significant step towards stopping the sheriff's office from violating people's civil rights," end quote. Well done. The bad. Dick Morris, the toe-sucking Fox so-called news talking head, slammed Ron Paul last night on the O'Reilly Factor. Here it is.
He is really, by far, the most liberal, radical candidate of the bunch.
Oh, wait a second. Dick Morris thinks Ron Paul is a radical liberal? Ron Paul's actually one of the most conservative, radical conservative candidates to run for office. He's a libertarian and wants to gut the government. But I get it. If Fox News doesn't like someone, just call him a liberal or a socialist or some other buzzword that resonates with a typical low-information voter. And the very, very ugly Newt Gingrich. Back in 2007, Newt Gingrich was a big supporter of cap-and-trade energy reform legislation, even telling Frontline that he would, quote, strongly support it, end quote. But then Newt decided to run for president this year and now claims he's never supported cap-and-trade. So why the change of heart? Well, turns out it was money. According to a report by the Washington Post, as soon as Newt flip-flopped on cap-and-trade, the campaign contributions from the oil barons came pouring in. An energy nonprofit organization the Newt created, known as American Solutions, received more than $2 million from major U.S. energy firms when Newt disavowed his support for cap and trade. Screw the environment. Newt wants the money. He's the very best corporate shill politician money can buy. And that's very, very ugly. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And, what do you do? What do you do? This looks good. Is that Armin and Bradenton?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Hey, Armin, you got a strategy?
I got a strategy, but first let me tell you, if I go the money, can I just take out Louise and leave you home with the cat?
Yeah, you'd have to negotiate that with Louise. You mean for the $1,000 contribution to Hunter School? I think you're stuck with me, Armin. But I'd love to take you out.
Okay. Anyway, what I do is...
Louise just said she's not going out alone with anyone. Okay.
Well, she hasn't saw me yet, so,
you
know.
All right.
She might say, Tom who?
Okay.
But anyway.
Too much information, Armin. Let's get back.
Okay. What I do is I pick up the phone and I say hello and... in a normal voice and tone, and then when I hear that it's a telemarketer, I go into my old man with a bad hearing aid.
Hello? Hello? Excuse me, please. Wait, I just got a new hearing aid. Can you repeat that, please? Just a minute, please. I can't hear you. Can you repeat that again, please? And then they go on and they say something, and I usually try to think of something that rhymes but is incorrect with what they should say. And like, my wife wears what kind of pantyhose? Are you kidding me? You know, or whatever.
Right, right.
And then go on and keep hitting the hearing aid and all that, and pretty soon they start laughing, and then usually they hang up.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. That's a good one, Armor. Thank you. I knew you had it in you. You're a creative guy. That's a funny one. Susan in Seattle. Hey, Susan.
Hey there. How are you?
Great.
Is it possible if two people chip in $500 each together, can they come have dinner with you?
I don't. You know, if it was a $1,000 contribution,
yeah.
I don't care how they pulled it together. That's fine with me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But two people could come to dinner then.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay,
that, we'd have to limit it. I think we'd have to limit it at two because I don't think that more than two people could stand in the control room. Yeah, we'll limit it at two. I just made that executive decision on the fly. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. A couple of things. Number one, I'm not sure about cell phones, but on my Comcast account, there's a place on the website where I can screen calls, put phone numbers in there, block anonymous calls.
Oh, nice.
And it has seriously cut down on my telemarketing calls.
Yeah, okay, good.
That also works for political calls you don't want to hear anymore and anybody else that's had a relationship with you.
Yeah.
And
that season is coming, by the way, that political call season.
Yes. Yeah, and I've put some political calls in. I have up to 10 numbers that I can put in, for do not call. There's also, if you tell a telemarketer, to put my number on your do not call list, they have to abide by that. And there's an agency that you can call, but I don't have it off the top of my head. And tell them you will, if they call back, you can say I'm going to report you.
Right.
Because
now this is what happened to Louise day before yesterday. She said, put my name on, and she got that far, and they hung up on her.
So they don't want to hear.
They don't want to hear it. But Susan, good point. Thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Matt in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm a big fan of yours. I've been listening to you for quite a while. And as I told your screen, I've been listening to you especially a lot recently because I got laid off from my firm.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
and
that.
I'm actually calling to speak about the other side of it, in that there are people who have to, if you're working any type of sales business, you've got to make calls.
Sure.
Even if it's the calls to homes. I was looking at, I Googled how many people work in the telemarket industry, sales,
right.
Telemarketing, 7.7 million people.
Wow. That's kind of sad.
So, my point is, what if everybody was to start treating all telemarketers like that?
Well, most people treat telemarketers by screaming obscenities at them and hanging up on them. And
I'm
absolutely not advocating that.
Right.
I'm saying, you know, have some fun with them. Give them a story that they're going to take home that night and say, you wouldn't believe, honey, what happened today. I actually had this guy convinced that, you know, I'd call a murder scene, you know, or something
right.
like that. I mean, I think this is good, harmless fun.
Right. But anyhow, I was just basically calling to give the other side.
I understand.
In the firm that I worked, quite literally the entire staff turned over twice in about a year, simply because part of it involves telemarketing, and most of the people couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it's tough work.
So,
like I said, I did it for a month. I sold light bulbs and women's nylon stockings when I was 16 years old for 1 month, and it was tough work. It is not something that you want to do. And I have empathy for those people, and at the same time, I don't want their calls. Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Karen in Abbeville, South Carolina. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Hey, yes, I like all these funny stories today. They are good. I have a phone number that's been around for a long time. You have to call on the phone that you want registered for no solicitation calls, and there will be none.
Uh-huh.
And there's no monthly charge or anything.
Right.
I don't know if it's a government department or what. I have no clue, but it's the number's 1-888-382 1222.
Oh yeah, I've seen that number. That's the federal put you on the do not call list number.
Yes, and they also accept cell phone numbers now.
Yeah. Okay. One thing to be very careful of, Karen, I believe that that number that you just gave out is the accurate number, but there are also websites that say, here's the do not call number, and when you call that number, if you call an 888 number or any kind of 800 number, like you're calling my 800 number right now, 800 numbers always have caller ID associated with them. So I can see that I can see your entire phone number, but I'll tell you the last four digits are 7274, right?
Yep.
That's your phone number. So if I had advertised this number as a put yourself on the do not call list and you called my number and I just, you know, had some recorded thing, it would automatically, it shows up on the bill actually. It lists all the calls, the number of the call, and then I could sell those numbers. We don't do that obviously, but be careful. Make sure that the number that you're calling to put yourself on the do not call list is not actually giving your name and your phone number to somebody who's going to sell it to somebody else. So, Karen, just a note of caution, not just to you, because I think you've got it figured out, but to all of our listeners. Ann, Petersburg, Indiana. We have a minute to the break. Ann, what's up?
I was over at my dad's a couple years ago, and the phone rang, and he went and answered it. And all of a sudden, he popped off in an assertive way. I don't believe in Santa Claus. Click. But he's a good jolly. He does believe in Christmas.
Uh huh. So it was a. It was
that's
a,
how he dealt with. That's how he deals with telemarketers, or that's how he did that day.
Yeah. So he just he doesn't believe in their sales pitch, or he
right.
Oh, okay.
He didn't believe on just getting something for nothing.
Oh yeah, because that's usually the pitch, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
We got something for you here.
And well, we're going to solve your problems here.
Yes, yes. We can make sure. And it's like the get rich quick ones. I always wondered, you know, these things that say, you know, here's how you can make money in your spare time, or here's how you can get rich at home. You know, well, why don't you just do that yourself? You know, it's like, why are you trying to sell it to me? And thanks, Ann, for the call. And I actually, when I was like a teenager, responded to one of those things. It was in a comic book, as I recall. And it was like, you know, how to make money at home. And I sent in my $5 or dollar or whatever it was. And they sent me a thing saying, here's how you do it. You put an ad in the paper saying, here's how to make money at home.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And then all these people will send you a dollar. And you send them back a letter saying, here's what you do. You put an ad in that says, here's how you make money at home. And you charge a dollar for it. Tell them Leonard, 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. Christy in North Hollywood. Hey, Christy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. This is my first time calling, but I've been listening for about 5 years.
Well, thank you.
My husband here. I was calling because of your thing about cell phones and telemarketers.
Mm-hmm.
I started getting the same problem, and I don't have a landline. A lot of your listeners seem to have landlines, but I don't. I only have the cell phone.
Same here.
So I actually downloaded an app for my cell phone for an Android.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Call Blocker, and it determines, like, there's a blacklist, so anyone else using this system, there are phone numbers that are already being told to block from other telemarketers.
Right.
And so it automatically blocks those, and then you can set settings to tell it block any number that's, you know, private or unknown, and send it directly to voicemail or hang up on them rather than even, like, you know, sending it to voicemail, you just hang up.
Right.
And you don't even have to do anything. I can just make it silent in the background, so I don't even see those calls anymore.
Huh. That's cool. That's great. I wonder if there's an app like that for the iPhone. And what's this about an it's an automated do not call app. I see. Okay, great. Christy, thank you for sharing that with me.
No problem.
I learned something new. Yeah, thank you. Happy New Year. We have the smartest callers in the world, I got to tell you. We really do. Kelly in San Jose. Hey, Kelly, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I wanted to let your callers know and let you know that if they all have a business or operate a business, and they answer their phone as like, hi, this is Tom, how can I help you? and somebody will say, oh, I'm trying to reach so-and-so. Is this who I'm calling? You say, yes, what's this regarding? If they say, well, I'm calling from the mortuary, you can say, this is a business line. Please do not call this number again. And if you leave your voicemail with any kind of a business or the company you work for, they cannot telemarket you at your business.
Oh, interesting. So they'll just stop trying to call that number because they'll figure, you know.
Well, they automatically, when they know it's a business, especially if you run your own business,
right,
they automatically take you off. So they won't call you again.
Oh, that's interesting. The guy who called me last night, who I couldn't understand, you know, who like it sounded like, as I said, I think he was calling from the Philippines. You know, he said, may I speak with Tom Hartman? And I said, you know, why? You know, and he said, I must speak with Tom Hartman, Thomas Hartman. And I said, no, you're not going to. And he said something, and I hung up the phone. I mean, yeah, that was it. But good point.
You let them know this is a business line. Please do not contact this number again. Then they have to automatically take you off. If they call you again, you've got their phone number, and you can find out who they are, and you can report them.
Okay, you got it. Thank you very much,
okay,
Kelly. Tom. Appreciate the call. Susan in Princeton, West Virginia. Hey, Susan, what's up? Susan? Oh, okay. I'm going to put Susan on hold. You got to listen to your radio, not your TV or radio station. Excuse me, to your telephone, not your TV or radio station. John, because there's a time delay. John in San Francisco. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. Good morning. If I get a call from a charity that I don't particularly want to donate to, I start talking to them about actual projects that I'm working on and ask them if they would be. What they would like to donate to my projects, and it gets them off the phone immediately.
That's a variation on the guy who's a telemarketer or who has a business who always tries to sell things to the people who call and telemarket him. That's a good one too. Thank you.
On Seinfeld, the old Seinfeld show, a telemarketer called Jerry, and he said, "Well, I'm busy right now, but if you give me your home phone number, I'll call you back later."
Right.
Oh, you don't like to be called at home? Well, now you know how I feel.
Yeah. There you go. Well said. Well said. Thank you very much, John. Susan, are you there now?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Susan, you're on the air.
Hi. My husband, he got a telemarketing call from our local newspaper. And here in West Virginia, there is a high illiteracy rate anyway.
Right.
So the lady from the newspaper was just explaining, you know, the deal and everything like that. Well, my husband let her talk probably for a couple minutes and stopped her and said, ma'am, I'm sorry, but I can't read.
Oh.
Which that is not true. She shut up and she told him, well, there is programs to help you. And that was basically all she said, and she hung up, and we have never got another call.
That's a good one, Susan. That's a good one. Thank you.
That was really funny. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for sharing that with us. There's a lot of great stories here. Jeff in North Providence, Rhode Island. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Just great.
I really, really enjoy your show a lot. Even though I'm a libertarian, I watch your show religiously. Believe me.
Okay. Thank you.
Anytime
we'll
I
have
can,
to discuss
I
politics
really
someday. But you have a telemarketer story.
Anyways, right, this is a telemarketer thing. This is how I deal with the telemarketers, and it's a really fun way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I ask them before they make their sales pitch, have you ever seen a UFO? And instead of hanging up on me, I would say 8 times out of 10, they tell me their UFO story.
Really?
Or, you know, the sighting they had or whatever, you know, maybe someone in their family had this unusual event happen to them or unusual sighting. And instead of, you know, cutting me off, I'm you know, listening for about 10 minutes to this really weird story about a UFO sighting or something that happened to them in that realm.
Right.
And it's just a fun way of dealing with that.
That's a variation of, I used to have a friend who used to just live for the moment that a Jehovah's Witness would show up at his, or Mormons, you know, the various missionaries would knock on his door. And then he would, even though he was not into Satan worship or anything like that, he would pretend that he was and that he was going to try and convert them, and usually totally freaked them out, you know, convinced them that they were talking to somebody who was possessed or whatever. And, you know, they've got to be,
right,
you know, variations on that. But asking people if they have UFO stories, I think that's fascinating that about 80% of the telemarketers tell you that they've seen UFOs. Thanks a lot for the call, Jeff. Well, I hope you have a happy new year. For everyone in your family, everyone, see, and we will have a super, super best of show for you tomorrow, and we'll see you next year. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up, when you get out there, when you get active. Tag, you're it. Occupy something. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.